We continue this shiur in Gemara. As we said, we are in a series of stories in the Gemara, which through the years we have told before, but because we're going in direct order of this Gemara itself, therefore we have these stories in succession. This is the story of one of the great rabbis of the Gemara, the rabbi of Rabbi Akiva. We say Rabbi Av Rabbi Akiva, you have to imagine how great he was. Rabbi Akiva was considered the greatest rabbi of all time, the only one about whom the Torah says that he matched in wisdom, he equaled Moshe Rabbeinu in wisdom. But Rabbi Akiva had rabbis who were his rabbis during his time of learning, and they were of course giants in holiness and in knowledge. One of these rabbis was Rabbi Nachum, who was called Nachum Ish Gamzu. He did not carry the title Rabbi Nachum, because some rabbis were so great that their names were greater than the word rabbi. For example, Hillel and Shammai were not called Rabbi Hillel or Rabbi Shammai. The name alone was greater than the word rabbi. And of course you can ask in that case, why is Moshe Rabbeinu not called by his name alone? The answer there is two. It is written that you have three ways of saying it. You have Rabbi so and so, that's great. Greater than that is Gadol, is Rabban, like Rabban Gamliel. Rabban is chief rabbi. And then Gadol Merabban Shemo. Greater than Rabban is the name alone. Greater than the name alone is if you have the word rabbi after the name, like Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the only one who has the word rabbi after the name. That's the highest. Now back to this case of Nachum Ish Gamzu. His name was Nachum, and he was called Ish Gamzu. There are two reasons why he was given that name. We'll see during the story, we'll explain this. Now this is a time, the story tells of the time when Nachum Ish Gamzu was blind, both eyes, both hands and arms were amputated, both legs were amputated, his entire body was filled, the rest of his body was filled with boils. It means he was in extreme suffering. Blind, no arms, no legs, and his body with boils. He was lying on a bed in a house that was very shaky. There was danger of this entire house caving in. The bed he was lying in had four legs. The four legs of the bed were placed in four pans of water. This was done to avoid having any ants crawl up, worms crawling up the side of the bed and attacking him, biting him, because he had no arms to ward them off. You can picture his condition, this great tzaddik. His students came in to move this bed out of the house, because of the fact that the house was in such bad condition, there was a danger of caving in. So they said, you have your belongings here, your dishes, other articles, of course it's sefarim, so let's first move your bed out first, so you'll be safe. The house caves in, so what if the items are lost? What if our first concern is you? He said to them, my children, remove all the articles of the house first, and then you can remove me and the bed from here. Why? Because I am certain that as long as I am in this house will not be able to cave in. The fact that I am a complete tzaddik, this was Chas v'Shalom not said with conceit, this was said with simple sincerity. It's the knowledge of his own status. The fact that I am a tzaddik, I'm not holy, and my greatness will protect this house from caving in. The minute I'm removed, my greatness is removed, the house will cave in. So as long as I'm here, you can remove all the articles and dishes and everything else. We know that they're safe. Then take me out. So the student said to him, Rabbi, can we ask you a question? Since you are so great a tzaddik, how come this happened to you? To have such a misfortune, a tragedy happen that you have arms and legs amputated, blind, and body in such physical condition. So he said to them, the fact is that it didn't happen to me. I did this to myself. I caused this to happen. Because one time I was going along the road, going to my father-in-law's home, and I had three mules carrying the various types of foods. There was regular type of food, I had drinks on the second mule, and sweets on the third mule. I was traveling along the road slowly. Middle of the road, there approached me a very poor beggar. He stood in the road and he said to me, Rabbi, please give me some food. Please feed me. I am hungry, starving. So I said to him, wait until I unload from my mule. I'll take the stuff off the mule first. I started to unload. Before I could get through, this poor beggar died. He couldn't wait that long. I had delayed too long in getting this food off. So I went and told the story, continued the story. I fell down over him. I bent down over him and I said, it's my fault. Therefore, my eyes that looked upon you and did not have pity, enough pity upon you, let those eyes become blinded. My hands that did not have pity upon your hands, that didn't move fast enough to remove the food from the mules, let these hands be amputated. My feet that did not move quickly enough, let them be cut off. And then I said, I'm not satisfied. This is not a sufficient penalty for myself. Let my entire remainder of my body be filled with boils, very painful boils. So the student said to Rabbi Nachum Ish Gamzu, woe is to us. Woe is to us that we see you in such condition. Woe is to us means, if this happens to you, the so great a tzaddik, we who are nothing in comparison, what do we deserve? Chas v'shalom. Nachum Ish Gamzu answered them, woe would be to me if you didn't see me in this condition. If you saw me now in perfect condition, then you'd have what to pity. Because if I wouldn't get punished for this here, it means that my punishment will be waiting for me in the Olam Haba. To get punished in heaven, that's much worse. Better to get it over with during lifetime and come there pure. So they removed the articles from the house, removed the Nachum Ish Gamzu from the house. As soon as he was out, the house came down. They saw how great he was. The Gemara says that why is he called Ish Gamzu? His name was Nachum. Why the name Ish Gamzu? The man of Gamzu. The Gemara answers because anything that ever happened, whatever happened, he would always say, in other words, any misfortune that would take place, he would always say, Gam Zu Litova. Also, this happened for the good. He would never find fault or worry about something that seemed to be bad, tragic that happened. He'd always say, this came from heaven and it's a good sign, it's for the good. Nothing can happen that's bad. This is based upon what the Gemara says, that in heaven only good can come down. There is no evil or bad in heaven. And since everything happens from heaven, it's always good. It's just that people on earth are blind. They cannot see through it. It appears to them as bad, but it must be good. And the Gemara illustrates now a case to prove this point. The Midrash tells us, though, that the real reason for being called Ish Gamzu is very simple. There was a city, Gamzu, and he was the inhabitant of that city. He was called by that city. It's like Eliyahu HaNavi is called Eliyahu HaGiladi because he came from the city of Gilad. Nachum Ish Gamzo is called Nachum, the man from Gamzo, the city of Gamzo. So the Gemara illustrates now why he was called Gamzo, or what's meant by the fact that he always maintained the policy of never complaining about anything bad happening. He always said it must be good. Only good can come of it. He later tells a story that one time the Jews wanted to send a gift to the Roman king. They were under the rule, the yoke of the Romans at that time. They wanted to send the gift to the king to sort of appease him, to invoke his friendship. They said, whom shall we send as the messenger? They decided we'll send Nachum Ish Gamzu, because he is a very great tzaddik, and if anything wrong may happen, he is accustomed to having miracles being performed for him. This story, of course, took place long before the time when he was incapacitated. So they gave Nachum Ish Gamzu a little box, a small chest filled with diamonds, pearls, to be given to the king as a gift. But it was a long trip to the palace, and on the road he came to an inn, and he had to stay over there overnight. While there, the innkeepers noticed he was carrying this expensive looking chest. While he was asleep, they took this chest, they opened it and found these diamonds, and they figured this is some take. But they didn't want to suspect that they had taken it. They took dirt, filled the box, this chest, with dirt that had the same weight as the diamonds. He got up in the morning, he didn't notice this, took the chest with him, continued on his journey, and he came to the king. He was brought private audience with the king. They told him this is a gift from the Jews. King opened this chest. Imagine the insulting act of bringing the king dirt. King was furious, and he immediately wanted to kill Nachum Ish Gamzu. That was his first reaction. Because his servants, his ministers, told him, the Jews are mocking you. Look at this gift they sent. When this was said, Nachum Ish Gamzu immediately said, Gamzu de Tova. It looks very bad, looks black, it looks dark. This is also for the good. It happened for the good. At that moment, one of the soldiers got up, one of the king's officers got up. This, of course, was Eliyahu Hanavi, who came down in the form of one of the king's officers. He said to the king, perhaps we should not be too hasty. Perhaps this is the earth that Abraham, the father of the Jews, used when he went into battle against his enemies. Because he had a kind of earth that when he threw this dust, this earth out, it turned into flying swords that wiped out the enemy. This might be a remnant of that earth that Abraham Avinu used. Why not test it? The king said, good, we have a way to test it. The Roman king said, we have one country, one land that we're trying to conquer for years and years, and we are incapable. We're not successful. Let's try it there. He sent this earth to his army, battling in that land. They tested it, and they immediately enjoyed victory. The report came back to the king. The king was overjoyed. He told his servants, take Nachum Ish Gamzu to his treasure chamber, take this chest and fill it now with the best diamonds, treasures of the king. He was sent off with great honor. On the way back, this road trip home, he stopped off at the same inn, and the innkeepers looked at him. They saw him come back with a chest. He showed them the diamonds now. They were amazed. They were speechless. So they asked him, what did you bring the king that made you merit at your price. He said, I brought the king whatever I came with from here. That which I came with me, that's what I brought the king. So, they figured, let's not play tricks with him now. We can do much better than just steal his chest of diamonds from him. They let him go on. And these people took their homes, their fields, they destroyed it, broke down the walls of their homes, and they crushed it, put it into big chests. They went to the king and brought large chests full of dirt, rock. And they said to the king, this is the same earth that the previous messenger brought you. We brought you a lot this time. One look at these people, and the king could see they weren't the same caliber as Nachamish Gamzu. But he said, let's test it. They tested it, and of course, it was worthless. And so all these innkeepers were put to death by the king. So we see that Nachamish Gamzu's policy of always saying, Gam Zu Litova. You understand the translation of the words. Gam means also in Hebrew, Zu, this, Litova, for the good. Also, this is for the good. Whatever happens is for the good. You recall the story of Rabbi Akiva, who was going along the forest. He was turned down. He had no money for a hotel. He had with him a mule, chicken, and a lantern. In the forest, his mule died, the chicken died, the lantern was extinguished. And each time he said, good. It's good because he was a student of Nachamish Gamzu. The result was that there were bandits, thieves who killed the people in that city. Because he had no mule to bray, or a chicken, a rooster, a crow, or the lantern to give away his whereabouts, his life was saved. So he said, you see that when something bad happens, it appears bad because you cannot see the future. But in heaven, when the thing is done, heaven knows what the future is. Only good comes from heaven. The one who is short-sighted, he cannot see the good yet. The one who has faith knows that it must be good since it is heavenly sent. This was the case of Nachum Ish Gamzu, the tzaddik who taught this lesson to his students, which Rabbi Akiva carried on after him. Rather, the Gemara tells us that in Syria was the land where Zav was the chief rabbi. Zav was the greatest tzaddik in his time. Remember, we mentioned that he had lived 400 years. He was the greatest student of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Zal. He is the one who wrote the Zohar HaKadosh. In the vicinity where Zav lived, a plague broke out. Disease, plague of death, and that is in the country where Zav lived, in Syria. In Syria, this plague broke out. In the immediate vicinity where Zav lived, no one got hurt, no one died. The people said, what a sign this is. See what it is to live close to a tzaddik. Zav is so great a tzaddik that the angel of death could not penetrate this vicinity. But he killed, he claimed victims throughout the entire country, but not in the vicinity of Rav. So a message came from heaven to the people in that vicinity. They all had the same dream to notify them of their error. The dream, they were told, this is not due to Rav's greatness, his mitzvot, because it would be degrading to say that this is his greatness. Rav is much greater than having something like this done for him. This doesn't take a big thing to get the place saved, rescued from the angel of death. Why then did this vicinity escape death? Because of someone else, one much smaller than Rav, much less important. Ordinary person, simple layman, but who always was very quick in lending his articles that were necessary. He had garden tools, other things that were necessary for the burial tools, cemetery, in order to bury people, that have these shovels, so on, to bury the dead. And he was anxious always to help the people, lending them his tools. A simple act like that, because he did this mitzvah of helping bury the dead, therefore, in his zechut, death stayed away from this vicinity. The Gemara says too that the city of Tiroklet, where Rav Huna was chief rabbi, the fire broke out. This was a very large, extensive fire that covered a great many portions of the city. But in the immediate vicinity of Rav Huna, there was no fire at all. It was though an invisible wall stopped the fire from entering this vicinity. Again, here too, the people were under the impression that it must be because of the zechut of Rav Huna that this happened. They too had a dream, and they were told that Rav Huna is much greater than having just this simple case happen to illustrate his greatness. The reason for this vicinity being saved is because of a woman. There was a woman there who was so kind-hearted that she always heated her oven ahead of Shabbat and allowed her neighbors, women, to come inside and bake on her oven. They would save the task of heating their own ovens or the expense of heating, and she was that good-natured to let the poor people bake on her oven. Because of her goodness, letting her fire be used, therefore fire itself, the angel of fire, became her friend, and that's why no fire could come to her vicinity. This directly is related with an item we'll have later on, where we find that women can perform certain mitzvot better than men. Women are considered, or thought to be, inferior to men. After all, when it comes to major mitzvot like tzitzit, tefillin, sukkah, women are exempt. They're missing the most important mitzvot in life. Yet there are certain other mitzvot that they have where their mitzvot can be more important, or one can equal all the major mitzvot of men. As in this case, notice there must have been good men in that vicinity too. They did not rate having this fire prevented from coming to the vicinity. It was this woman's act. We'll have more on that a little later. The Gemara says that Rav Yehuda, who was a chief rabbi his time, was told there seems to be a plague coming, a plague of locusts coming to attack the fields of the Jews. Rav Yehuda declared or decreed a fast day for all Jews, a fast to pray. So people told him, well, why should we fast? After all, we have not had reports of any damage being done by the locusts yet. So perhaps they'll pass by without stopping to destroy the fields. If you dare answer them sarcastically, did you contact the locust leaders and find out if they took along their lunches with them? They bring food. They came here. They're coming here to eat. So let's not delay a moment. We declare this fast and prayer. Only that manner will be saved from this plague of locusts. In the city of Shmuel, chief rabbi in his city, he was told that there is a plague of death, a deadly disease that has struck the neighboring city of Bechuzay. Shmuel decreed a fast in his city. People asked him, but the plague is very far away. Disease is far. Why should we fast when disease has not struck our city? Here too, Shmuel answered sarcastically, do you think that this plague needs a boat to cross the river? Well, if there's no bridge, the plague will stay on its own side. This plague can strike, doesn't need transportation. So we are as much in danger and should be ready to prepared for it by prayer. Rav Nachman was in Babylon. He was told that there's a plague of death that has struck Eretz Yisrael. He issued a decree, a fast in Babel, and he said, we are so far from Eretz Yisrael, so there's surely no possibility of any contagion, this plague reaching us. The reason we must fast and declare this day of prayer is because Eretz Yisrael is called the master or the queen, where we are, Galut, is called the maid, the Chidema. So if the queen is stricken, if any hardship decree comes down against the queen, then surely the maid is in danger. If any Israel has a plague, then surely Bavel is certainly in jeopardy, and therefore we should be prepared with praying and fasting for it too. The Gemara says that there was a man named Abba Umna. He was a doctor, and a doctor, not a rabbi. Yet he was a very great tzaddik. Umna means an expert in his field. In those days, the days of the Gemara, they had a different method for curing people. If a person had a fever or he had a disease, there was one way they cured it, and that was to remove the diseased blood from the body. They called it letting blood. They would take a special article, a syringe sort of, and through this draw out a certain amount of blood from the person's arm, and with this bad blood would come out this disease, and so a person would be cured. Depending upon the extent of the disease, that's how much blood they would let out. Of course, after the person had this blood let out, he had to recuperate by eating well to receive new blood, to rebuild himself. This Abba Umna was a doctor and expert in this field, and at that time, he lived in a time of Abaye and Rava, two most famous rabbis, the Gemara in the later generations, the two biggest tzaddikim of their time. The Gemara says that every day there would come a message from heaven, from the yeshiva of heaven. In heaven there's a yeshiva with the angels, the holiest souls of tzaddikim, and the yeshiva would send a message of shalom, of greetings to Abba Umna, this doctor, every single day. Imagine what an honor that is, how great the tzaddik he must have been. Now, to Abaye, who was one of the two chief rabbis then, a message was sent every Friday, every Erev Shabbat, once a week. This doctor got a message every single day. Abaye received a message only once a week. And Rava received a message once a year, every Erev Yom Kippur. Abaye felt very bad about this. Why did he deserve once a week when he was a chief rabbi and the biggest tzaddik then, and this doctor who wasn't even that much learned, didn't study Torah, he got a message once a day? What is this superiority that this doctor has over the chief rabbi of the Gemara? So he was told, he received a message from heaven telling him, to Abaye, telling him that don't envy this doctor, don't feel badly, because you cannot emulate this doctor. You couldn't do the good that he does, as great as you are. So he asked, what is his greatness? What does it consist of? They said, well, Abba Umna is one who draws blood from patients. And this means you have to roll up the sleeve and draw blood. This is done to patients, both male and female. According to Torah, a woman's first primary mitzvah, above all mitzvot, is the mitzvah of tzidiyut, modesty. Be dressed modestly to cover places that must be covered. One of the places that is considered erva that must be covered are the arms, up to and below the elbow. The blood is drawn from the arm that's above the elbow. This is erva. It's forbidden for a man to see it. So Abba Umna, this doctor, had a special sheet cut out. The woman would sit and have a small opening, an aperture in this sheet, just enough to get this tube inserted through the sheet into the arm, and that way draw out the blood so he would not have to look at the woman's arm. This was one point of his greatness. Secondly, he would keep men and women in separate rooms. They shouldn't see each other, so as not to invite, to incite any temptation on the part of men, seeing women patients. Third, he was that good that he never embarrassed a patient. Not everyone can afford this treatment. So he had a special cup placed there. A notice was written there that anybody who could afford should pay the price. Those who couldn't are exempt. Nobody can see what a person puts in. So no one could tell if a person paid the full price, or he paid just a few cents, or he paid nothing at all. No one was embarrassed whether he was rich or poor. This too is one of the most important characteristics, never to embarrass a person. Fourth, whenever a Talmid Chacham, a learned person, sage, came to Abba Unna for treatment, then in addition to giving him the treatment free, when he was finished, he would tell him, here is a few dollars, a few silver coins, now go out and buy yourself good healthy food so you can come back to yourself, strengthen yourself. This was in addition to the fact that he did not charge him for the visit. This is what Abaye was told. These are all very admirable traits. Abaye said, I want to test him, see how true this is, how well-meaning this is. He sent two of his students, two very great rabbis, to him. Test him, he told them. They had to have blood taken. They came to his home, and he recognized them as big rabbis. He examined them, he helped them. Then he told them afterwards, sit down, please, here's some food. He invited them to eat and drink. And he said, no, you still must be weak. I'd like to invite you to sleep over my home. They accepted. He took some very expensive blankets, folded them, placed them under them for the sleep on to be soft. They got up early in the morning, upon instructions from Abaye to test them. They took these expensive blankets, they wrapped them up, and they sneaked out of the house. They stole out with these blankets in their possession. Then they went to the marketplace and they waited. And then this doctor came, was walking past, and he told them, good morning, doctor, we'd like to ask you a question. We are not too acquainted with the value of items. We'd like you to appraise this item for us. They showed him the blankets. What do you think this is worth? He told them, I believe it's worth so much or so much. So they said, you might be mistaken, perhaps it's worth more. So he said, no, that's how much I paid for it, so I know how much it's worth. So they said to him, well, then you realize these are yours. We took them from you. They said, now that you know we took it, we'd like to ask you, please tell us, what did you suspect us of? You were aware of the fact we took it. Did you suspect us of a crime? He said, Chas v'shalom. I never suspect you of a crime. I felt perhaps you needed this desperately to use for the mitzvah of pidyon shivuyin. The highest charity in existence is the charity of ransoming a Jew in captivity. You needed the money to raise the money for this ransom, therefore you took it, because you're allowed to take something when you're in such a desperate state. So that's why I gave it to you. I didn't complain at all. I was very happy you took it. And I figured that perhaps you were embarrassed to ask me for it, so you took it, and I said, I felt certainly you were right. So they said to him, well, now that you are aware of the fact that we did not take it for that reason, we just took it for the game, so please take it back. He said, impossible. I cannot take it back anymore, because the minute I saw this was taken, in my mind, I made this hekdesh. I declared this holy as charity in my mind. Once I declared my possession charity, holy, I cannot take it back anymore. So now you must keep it and give it to charity. When Abaye heard this, he said, I understand now that it's impossible for me to copy Abba Unna. First place, his heart, his good-heartedness, his purity, are to be admired. Second place, he said, I'm too busy learning Torah. I can't take time out to be a doctor and do these things. So I could never copy what he's doing. But he stopped feeling badly about the fact that this doctor deserved having this greetings from heaven every day. Meanwhile, Rava felt slighted. Why should Abaye receive a message every Friday, every Erev Shabbat, and Rava received the message only once a year, Erev Kippur? So he was given the answer in a dream. The reply was to Rava, you don't get a message every day of greetings, but enough the fact that you know that after Abaye passes away, you will become the chief rabbi of both your domain and his together. Yours a chut, your zvot will have to protect everyone in both cities. This should suffice to appease you completely. The Gemara says that Rav Broka, one of the great rabbis of the Gemara, was once walking along a large marketplace, and he met Eliyahu Hanavi, Eliyahu the prophet. Now, of course, this shows how great he was, because the Hanavi will not appear before just any person. No one could see him except a very, very great tzaddik. When he met him, Rabbi Rokas said, I'd like to ask you a question. You see this marketplace filled with so many people? A lot of people here must be good, very good. Some more, some less. But can you tell me, is there anyone in this entire marketplace who is going to get Gan Eden, guaranteed? And this, of course, means it's a marketplace of Jews. In those days, when the Jews were much more religious than today, just about everyone got Gan Eden. This question didn't mean that. This question was, anyone here that pure, and of course they'll go to Gan Eden, but anyone that perfect that will go to Gan Eden the moment he dies, without having to appear before the heavenly court even, that pure that there's no question of Gehinnom, trial, suffering, or anything. He is that perfect, will go right to Gan Eden. The NIV said to him, nobody. Nobody here that good. He waited a few minutes, and then he said to him, wait. There's a man coming down the road, the market. This one is one who will receive Gan Eden directly. So Rabbi Lokas said, I must meet this man. What kind of a tzaddik is this? He must be a genius in Torah. He must be one who prays all day long and learns Torah and does nothing else but confines himself to only acts that are holy. Let me gaze upon this man. He came close and he saw this man was dressed in very simple, ordinary clothes of Goyim, not even wearing Jewish clothes at all. Those days, of course, there was a very clear distinction between clothes of Goyim and clothes of Jews. Like today, there are certain aspects, there is a difference. Despite the fact that many Jews today have adopted the habits, the garments, and the mode of Goyim, but the law, according to Torah, does draw a line. In those days, of course, all Jews dressed one way, while the Goyim dressed otherwise, same as the Jews in Egypt, who were taken out of Galut in Mitzrayim. The Torah tells us because of the fact, one of the reasons was purely because of the fact that they never changed their clothes. They were slaves in Egypt, but they kept their clothing as Jews, which they were not ashamed of. I saw this man was wearing clothes of Goyim. Not only that, he didn't have any tzitzit on. Which Jew goes without tzitzit? So he said to him, I've got to find out what this man does. What makes him so great a tzaddik? He'll never go to Gehinnom, we'll never have any trial in heaven. He's that pure. He ran after him and he said to him, please, I must talk to you. The man said, Rabbi, I have no time to talk to you. Come back tomorrow. I'll talk to you then. I figured this is a mystery. It's worth coming back. The next day he came and he said to him, tell me, what do you do? I'm sure you're not a rabbi, not a teacher. What's your work? So he said, I am a jail keeper, prison keeper. fine, what's the big thing about a prison keeper? He said, in the first place, I see that men and women are kept separately. And in prison, you have the wrong element. I keep my bed at night in between the men's section, women's section. They didn't have them closed in bars like today, of course. They were herded with my cattle. I keep them separate, so that no time can any man attempt to do anything wrong to molest a woman, for as long as I'm there. And if I see that there is one woman, a Jewish woman, who happens to be in prison for some charge of any kind, and I see Goyim want to attack her, then I jeopardize my own life, or risk my life to save her. One time there was a girl who was engaged, and of course there's a death penalty for any relations with a Jewish engaged or married woman. And there were Goyim who wanted to molest her, so I took some red wine and I poured it over her. I told them that she's right now in an unclean state. This way I saved her. So the Rokas said, it's very nice, it's commendable, but still I don't see why this person deserves complete gan-eden. This is a nice act, but it's not that much. He said, why do you wear clothes of goyim? Why couldn't you wear regular clothes? He said, why don't you wear tzitzit? So he answered, because without these tzitzit, with these clothes, I can mingle with goyim. And that way I find out their plans of the officers, the officials of the kingdom, if they have any plans to issue a decree of any kind against the Jews. When I hear about this, I notify the Jews immediately, and the chief rabbis of the Jews declare a fast, a day of prayer. This way they negate this decree. So he said, I asked you yesterday to speak to you. Why did you refuse? Why did you postpone it till today? He said, because yesterday I heard about a certain plan that Goyim had, and I said, I must go tell the chief rabbis about this to save them. Now, Barakah was satisfied, but he felt, well, I've met one. This entire place, nobody else is that good. Then two men were walking by. Leonavi said to Rabbi Rokeach, these two also are ones who receive Gan-Eden immediately. So he ran to them and he asked them, what do you do? They said, we are jokers, comics. Comics, that's not to be lauded, to be praised, because the Torah frowns upon comics. We have the Holy Temple destroyed, the Jews of Galut, there's nothing to laugh about much. The Torah says that in heaven there's no laughter. What's good about comics? They said, well, when we see a person who's in a very depressed state of mind, he's very sad, he's an atzmut, and the person just seems to have given up hope, he's that forlorn, then we raise his spirits by joking, by laughing, bring him to a higher spirits, to an elation where he can go back, return to do his work. And this is the biggest mitzvah possible. To make a Jew happy, to bring simcha to a person, especially, let's say, one who is sick, one who has worries, to bring happiness to him, to bring a little joy to his life, that's the biggest mitzvah possible. Secondly, they said, if we see two people who are arguing, there's a battle between them, then we do our best to intervene and to make peace between the two, whether it's husband and wife, or whether it's two friends who have sort of become estranged. They're at odds. We try to make peace between the two. And this is a simple translation. Of course, there's something much deeper than this, in that the Gemara tells us that there's a pasuk by King David, Bikudei Hashem Yisharim Samchei Lev. What can really bring joy to the heart of a Jew is the study of Torah. Nothing can make a Jew feel more lighthearted, more satisfied than an interesting study of Torah. These two were Chachamim, who said, if we see a person who's depressed and sad, we make him happy, not by telling jokes, by telling him words of Torah that pacify him, that appease him, and then bring a lighter feeling to him and more satisfaction and happiness. When we see two people battling, battling means we see a person who is tempted. He's in the middle of a war with himself. He has the Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara, the good and the bad. And he's trying to battle to overcome his Yetzer Hara. We help him because we encourage him. We tell him about how big the mitzvah is to defeat the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, how great the reward is ultimately. This will be helped to make peace within himself. This certainly, he said, rates being zochet to Gan Eden. And it's this lesson that we must learn. The Bein Ezel stresses very much the mitzvah of this combination, simcha and shalom. Person to always be b'simcha, and if he is b'simcha, that's the greatest weapon against the Yetzer Hara. Because the Yetzer Hara rules over that person who is in a depressed state of mind, who has worries and who gives up hope too easily. A person should always be in a happy frame of mind, because simcha is the best cure physically, mentally, and spiritually. And that way he'll have peace within himself, peace of mind, peace of heart. And in the zechut of that kind of peace in simcha, will be zochet to the bi'at goel tzedek, the Yavid.